Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Walker Wildman, how you doing, Walker?
Good morning, doing well.
Walker, are we on the internet?
We are. We're on multiple places on the internet. First is Facebook. Second is YouTube. The last place is our website, afr.net. Facebook and YouTube, you can watch the show.
Just type in Today's Issues.
That's right. Type in Today's Issues on Facebook or YouTube. You can watch the show.
Live.
That's right. And I'll post the news articles on our Facebook page also.
All right, take advantage of that. We have breaking news from the United States Supreme Court. Steve Jordahl's with us this hour. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Two cases actually came down today that are quite important. The first one that came down was what's known as NIFLA v. Becerra. Becerra is the Attorney General in California. And NIFLA stands for the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates. This was a law that said that if that pro-life pregnancy centers had to post in their building and on all of their websites information about how you can get an abortion. Because California, in their infinite wisdom, decided that it just wasn't right for these pro-life pregnancy centers to be able to operate. So the Supreme Court struck down that law. It's called the FACT Act. That stands for Freedom, Accountability, Comprehensive Care, and Transparency Act. It was passed by the California legislature. By a 5-4 vote, an opinion written by Justice Thomas, they said that the FACT Act is likely unconstitutional, sent the case back down to the Ninth Circuit to rule according to their opinion.
That's not good.
Well, it's what happens. It's the way that things are done. Rarely does the Supreme Court just say, this is it and we're done. What they do is they say, this is where, appeals court, this is where you were wrong. Now go back and fix it.
What's the point of a Supreme Court ruling if they don't overrule the Ninth Circuit?
Well, they did overrule the Ninth Circuit. I think what we're talking about here is a technicality, sending it back. It's basically an overruling of the FACT Act. It is not constitutional to require pro-lifers to express a pro-abortion view or information.
And that is part of their ruling, right? I mean,
yes.
So that part's not a technicality. That's a major ruling in terms of, and I know we're just still processing some of this. We may find out some other things, for example, as Abraham Hamilton III goes over this ruling, but that's good. What is disturbing is that there were four justices on the Supreme Court. We were talking about this before the show started, Tim. We're talking about our constitutional republic and our rights, especially our First Amendment rights, hanging by a thread because four justices on the Supreme Court thought a state could force Christians to promote abortion.
Mm-hmm.
That's an outrage. And why Americans aren't demanding that those idiots be impeached
is just
beyond me.
And let me just say something to you Never Trumpers out there for a minute, please. The Supreme Court, we talked about this when the election was going on between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and the people said, well, I just can't vote for Donald Trump for whatever reason. And we said, well, the Supreme Court hangs in the balance for a generation, so you better think long and hard about whether you're not going to vote or whether you're going to vote for a third party who has no chance to win. When we said to you, no, this is too important, the future of our country and our religious freedoms are at stake, this is exactly what we were talking about right here. Had President Trump not won and Hillary Clinton won, and Neil Gorsuch would have been, not Neil Gorsuch, but another progressive liberal to the Supreme Court, and then the Christian pro-life centers in California would have been forced to promote abortion. And I guess most of them would have probably just shut down instead of violate their conscience. So this I just want this to be a teaching moment, okay? things are not always clean and tidy, but you have to consider the big picture. You have to consider what's at stake. And I think the vast majority of Christians who voted did, and they were sophisticated enough to know, hey, I don't approve necessarily of something Donald Trump did 10 years ago. I may even think it's terrible, but I'm not going to cast a vote for somebody who will help elect Hillary Clinton to the presidency, and therefore do away with our religious liberties in the name of, I didn't like the way Donald Trump talked.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
And let's not fool ourselves. If California wins that battle before the Supreme Court 5-4. Other states, New York, Illinois, all the liberal states would have done the same thing. You'd have had these.
They're coming after us.
They are coming after us. You'd have had these crisis pregnancy centers shutting down all over the country. So all those babies that are saved by their work and their ministry die.
Right. All because you didn't want to vote for Donald Trump because he said something or did something you thought was unchristian. Again, I'm not saying...
This is real world. These are real world consequences.
This shows how close we are to government forcing Christians to violate their religious beliefs. Beyond baking the cake or selling flowers to a wedding.
But
you're talking about a Christian crisis pregnancy center having to promote the death of a child in their center. That is Christians being forced by the government to go against their religious beliefs.
Yes, Walker, but you remember how many of our Christian brothers were saying, don't vote for Donald Trump because, and you know, vote for somebody who has no chance to win in the name of being righteous.
Right.
And you see the real life consequences that would have happened here. I'm not trying to make people feel guilty. I guess I am. And I know that 75 to 80% of the Christian community did vote for President Trump because they saw exactly what we're seeing here. Too much is at stake.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, what I'm saying is there is a time to call out your brethren when we said something prior to the election and now we have real-term consequences or real-life consequences. As Ed just pointed out, as you just pointed out, Walker, we need to make this a teaching moment.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, so President...
Go ahead.
President Trump and Hillary Clinton, in the third and final debate before the election, Hillary Clinton clearly stated by not speaking, by not defending herself, that she is okay with partial birth abortions. Abortion up to the minute before the child is born. Donald Trump said, that's what you're for and it's shameful. She did not deny it. Donald Trump said, I'm against abortion and I will do everything in my power, whether it be Supreme Court justices, to put pro-life
and
justices.
He has.
And he has, Gorsuch. So that was the defining moment. So despite President Trump's imperfections, his language, his name-calling, that's what it's about. Are you for death or life?
Right.
And a lot of people voted for life.
Just an aside on this case, one interesting dynamic, many states have laws telling abortion providers or abortionists what they need to say to women seeking an abortion. It's called informed consent laws. These laws have been challenged as undue burdens on the right to obtain abortion, but they have never been challenged under the kind of First Amendment theory that's developed in this case. In the long run, writes one court expert, this ruling may limit the state's ability to force doctors to provide certain kind of information to women seeking an abortion. So there may be a good news, bad news on this. The second case that
let me just say something about that. I'm not an attorney, but I'm just giving you my opinion. I don't see those things being comparable. We're talking about First Amendment religious freedoms, and I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying we're talking about First Amendment religious freedom not being encroached upon by the government, as opposed to medical knowledge that doctors should dispense.
They didn't decide this on religious freedom grounds. They decided it on free speech grounds. This decision.
Okay, but
had
a doctor doesn't. A doctor can't refuse to tell you you have cancer on First Amendment grounds.
No, but it can. The doctor, according to this First Amendment theory, I guarantee you that the other side is going to use this to say if we can't force pro-lifers to talk about the option of abortion, then you can't make us abortionists talk about the option
I'm just
of
saying,
choice.
I certainly understand the other side will try anything, and they'll find federal judges to agree with them. I just don't see those things as comparable.
All right,
okay, the other decision.
Let me introduce our guest because I want him to comment on what you're going to talk about.
Okay.
Dr. Frank Turek is with us from Cross Examine Ministries. We're here every Tuesday that he wants to be. sometimes he doesn't want to be, and he just makes up excuses. I've caught him in several of those before. But we're glad today he's chosen to be on with us, Dr. Frank Turek from Cross Examine, joining us from the Charlotte area. How you doing, Frank?
Yeah, Tim, I'm glad we moved our tea time so we could be on today.
Okay, tell the world.
Please tell me you're talking about golf and your tea time does not include holding your pinky while drinking
duly
hot
noted,
British
Ed.
Liquid.
Never
That's
thought
right.
about that. Never thought about that. All right, Frank, I would like you to comment on what Steve is going to tell us about.
The second decision, Frank, that came down today, you probably have heard, is a reversal or an upholding of President Trump's so-called travel ban or so-called Muslim ban. What they are saying, the court said, is despite the fact that, yes, he made comments that look like they were a ban on broad ban on Muslims, that he has the right to craft for immigration policy however he wants.
5-4.
Well, another 5-4 decision.
Yeah, another 5-4. This goes back to your point, Tim, that if Gorsuch – was Gorsuch in the majority? I haven't seen a decision yet.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, okay, there you go. If he wasn't there and Hillary Clinton had put someone in there, would have gone the other way. But you know what I'm a little concerned about is the idea that these Supreme Court justices have that the mental state of the either the president or the mental state of somebody on the Colorado Civil Rights Commission is somehow germane to a particular law that's passed. Like in this case, they were trying to say, they came out on the right side, but it doesn't matter whether the president loves or hates Muslims. That's not the point.
Mm-hmm. Right,
the point is, does he have the constitutional authority to restrict immigration for whatever reason? And clearly he does. And with regard to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, the masterpiece Jack Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were trying to say, well, you know, the reason we're going to strike this down mm-hmm. is because this Colorado Civil Rights Commission was mean. They were mean to Jack Phillips. They weren't neutral to religion. Well, that wasn't really the point. Again,
right.
I think they came down on the right side. But the point isn't whether somebody treated Jack Phillips meanly or not, or whether they were neutral toward religion. The point should have been, does Jack Phillips have the right to refuse to express himself in a way that goes against his conscience? And I think the answer is yes, regardless of whether the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was mean or nice to him.
And Frank, that's a decision or a ruling that the Supreme Court punted on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right, Frank. Some of these decisions, while they've gone in our favor, in the favor of the Constitution, are on shaky foundational ground by the way that they came up with their decision. Like you're saying, the headline on Drudge is Supreme's uphold travel ban. Well, the Constitution and the statutory law here in our country say that the President of the United States has exclusive authority over, or he has the right to suspend travel to America and for any reason and for any class of people.
Hey, let me read that if I can. I have the part of the 1952 federal law. This is from the Immigration and Nationality Act. It says, in part, whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem to be appropriate. That seems pretty clear to me.
That's clear. And what happened here is that four United States Supreme Court justices says, we don't care about that law. We will decide mm-hmm. who comes into this country, not the President of the United States of America. So we've got four justices. We're one away from being completely ruled by the Supreme Court of the land.
It's a little closer than that, too, gentlemen, because the five that ruled for the president's ability to craft that ban said in the majority opinion said this: we will. The issue before us is not whether to denounce the statements that president made about banning Muslims.
It is
instead the significance of those statements in reviewing a presidential directive neutral on its face addressing a matter within the core of the executive's responsibility. The government has set forth a sufficient national security justification to survive. We express no view on the soundness of the policy. We simply hold that the plaintiffs have not demonstrated a likelihood of success on the merits. They are veiling what they're saying is we disagree with the president's rhetoric. We think he is racist. We think that they're not, but he nonetheless, as much as we wish we could rule otherwise, the majority says we have to rule for the president because of the law. But they're not distancing themselves from those statements.
Yeah, Steve, I got to say something about if they said, did they say they think the president's racist in the opinion?
Not in so many words.
I thought they said we're not going to get into that.
That's what they said. The court says that it will look beyond the face of the proclamation to consider the plaintiff's extrinsic evidence about the president's motivations, but will uphold the policy so long as it can be reasonably understood to result from a justification independent of unconstitutional grounds. Those unconstitutional
grounds. That
exonerates
the president right
there.
Well,
but the unconstitutional, they say as long as the result is you can justify this law independent of unconstitutional grounds. Those unconstitutional grounds they imply here are the racist or so-called racist statements of the president. They're acknowledging that he made them.
This is just ridiculous because Islam is not a race. Islam is an ideology. It's a belief system. Christianity's not a race either. Well, why are they thinking that this has anything to do with race to begin with? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, and to your point, Frank, the 1952 federal law that I just quoted from, the Immigration and Nationality Act, that was passed in the middle of the Cold War when there was valid fear of communist influence in this country. And I think most historians would understand that law as being passed to keep an ideology out when it comes into this country through the people who hold to that ideology. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is almost exactly parallel to what the president is wanting to do. Obviously, communists and jihadists can, blow up a substation to knock out power, but it's also to keep the ideology out as the people who hold that ideology try to come into the country. So to your point, Frank, this is not about a race. This is about an ideology that was threatening in 1952, i.e. communism, and in 2018, i.e. radical Islam.
Look, this is not up. What we're saying here is this is not up to the Supreme Court of the country. They're doing it anyway, even the conservative ones, I guess, to get into touchy-feely Dr. Phil stuff.
Right.
And deciding, well, what is his motive, and what is he saying, and how does he feel, and how does this make people feel as they try to put all that stuff into their ruling.
Mm-hmm.
This should be cut and dried. Either it's constitutional or it isn't. It has nothing to do with how people feel. President Trump could ban dwarfs from coming to America.
He could say no dwarfs. No one under five foot tall would be small of him.
Now listen.
What I'm saying is the constitutional authority to do so. You have a duly elected commander in chief who's supposed to look after the safety of our country, and if he can't do that because judges say no, we'll do it instead of you.
Right.
You know,
and we are run by.
Or we'll stop you. We'll stop you from doing your carrying out your commander in chief responsibilities. We're one Supreme Court justice away from losing that. Go ahead, Frank.
No, I was just going to say that I took an oath when I was in the Navy, and the president, this is the same oath everybody takes, and the oath is that you will support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You're supposed to support the Constitution. That's what the judges, that's what their oath is. They're not to support their own ideology or their own political persuasion or their own political preferences. Mm. They're to support the Constitution of the United States. And if the president thinks that there are people who want to come to this country, that want to take down the Constitution, take down the nation,
whether it's Muslims, communists, whoever it is, he has the right to do that. In fact, I don't know if you saw this last week. There was Army Academy, West Point Academy graduate, mm-hmm. who was a devout communist, and they kicked him out. They kicked him out of the military because of his ideological position. It doesn't comport with supporting and defending the Constitution of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Frank, thanks so much for your time, brother. And your main point was that Muslims are not a race.
They're an ideology, just like Christians.
Right.
We're an ideology. We believe certain things. And whether or not those things that we believe comport or oppose the Constitution is the grounds upon which the president and the Supreme Court need to make decisions, not whether or not they think the guy has some sort of racial or anti-racial, or it has nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Frank, I think you need to go eat some ice cream or drink an icy or something. You just need to calm down, cool off a little bit. It's June. Man, just take a break.
You're right. Tim, when are we golfing today?
It's too hot to do yard work. So we better go golf. Huh?
Yeah, we could be in 90 degree heat for 5 hours, but we can't do yard work. Is
but
that what you're
that
saying?
Mean you're not going to replace your divots? That's kind of yard work.
That's what I told my wife one time. Way too hot to do yard work. I'm going to go golf.
Tim, right. We don't live in the same state, so we're not playing golf.
That's right. What's your website, Frank?
The website, crossexamined.org, although some of the shots I do hit go out of state.
the left and to the right.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Frank.
Hey, appreciate thanks, guys. Brother. Great being with you.
Okay. Steve.
We got other news to talk about. That was the Supreme Court is big, and I'm glad we talked about it. But President Trump, as you might remember, signed an executive order saying that we're going to keep children and families together after the whole outrage at the border. Well, the way that the border and Customs and Border Protection is going to deal with this is as follows. Because Immigration and Customs Enforcement does not have enough detention space for the surge of families crossing the border illegally, many families will be quickly released with a promise to return to court. Does that remind anybody of anything? We're back to catch and release with families that cross the border with children.
Has the president commented on that?
I have not seen a comment from the president on this. He's been kind of busy taking on the media.
That seems like backtracking on his part. If he agreed to that.
Again, his executive order said we need to keep family and children together. The way that it's carried out was up to a lower level of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So I don't think the president directed them to go catch and release, and it's not catch and release with everybody like it was under President Obama, but it is with these families with children, which I think means you're going to see a whole lot more families
unless you have what I've talked about and what the president talked about yesterday, that is an expedited way to deport people. Right when they come over the border, you send them right back. President cited Mexico as an example. He said Mexico keeps people 4 hours, right. And then they're going back to the countries in Central America that they illegally immigrated into Mexico from. If you got everybody who comes across the border having an appearance before a judge, then you're going to lead to migrant camps,
right?
And you're going to lead to
And exactly.
That's what you got here. That's what you got here. So, and that's what they want. That's what these folks want, you know, to bog everything down. And, you know, so I think you're going to have something what the president's talked about here, where you just, you know, people come across the border, you send them right back. I mean, this is, you don't have to go through a judicial process.
Right.
With all of them. We'll be back. Sandy Rios will be with us in just a few minutes. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III of the Hamilton Corner.
Psalm 127, children are arrows in the quiver of a mighty warrior, the parents being the mighty warriors, and arrows require trajectory and direction.
We'll also hear news and analysis from Chris Woodward and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, we only go to the Holy Land once a year, and that's in March. Last year, we filled up several months in advance. So if you want to go in March of 2019, it's time to look at the details. You can get a brochure from us at 800-FAMILIES, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your telephone number, or go to twholyland.com, twholyland.com. It's going to be a wonderful time in Israel. We'll go to the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, the Holy City of Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Masada, the Dead Sea, and on the list goes. If you'd like to go with us in March of 2019, all the information is available at twholyland.com. Order a brochure by calling 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. I want you to pay very close attention to what I'm about to say. We are living in a very dangerous time in American history. The far left has declared war on the Trump administration and the president's supporters. There appears to be a concerted effort to bully conservatives. They want to silence your voice. Congresswoman Maxine Waters telling an angry mob to target Trump staffer. Singer John Legend joined the angry chorus. If you don't like the harassment, resign. That's what he said. Conservatives, by and large, are a peaceful people. They want to be left alone to live their lives. They do not go looking for a fight. But unfortunately, the fight has come to them. And conservatives must take a stand for free speech and free assembly. We cannot and we must not allow the beliefs of Maxine Waters and John Legend to rule the day. That's why the silent majority can no longer be silent. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues here on American Family Radio. If you'd like to send us an email... Sorry about get some popcorn going on. I tried to get through with it before we came back from the break, but popcorn can linger.
Yeah, it's kind of like carrots.
They you hang know? Around a while.
Yeah,
can't
they do.
Popcorn, if you can call popcorn they. I guess it's just a pronoun for an inanimate object. All right, so what was I talking about?
Emails.
Oh, yes. Email us at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net if you'd like to send us an email here to American Family Radio. As Walker said earlier in the program, should you want to watch this show, go to Facebook and just type in Today's Issues, or YouTube, type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show there. I'm Tim Wildman with Evan Tagliano and Walker Wildman, and we, as always, want to express our appreciation to you for listening to this show and to the American Family Radio Network. Steve Jordahl reported last half hour two huge Supreme Court rulings that came down earlier this morning. Steve, can you give us a 60-second review of what happened?
The first ruling that came down was a ruling called NIFLA v. Becerra. It is a law in California that said that pro-life pregnancy centers had to post information about where a woman could get an abortion. The court ruled that that violates the free speech rights of pro-lifers and struck down that law. The second ruling was on President Trump's so-called travel ban, and they upheld the right of President Trump to decide how he's going to do his immigration policy, and so they upheld the ban on these travel from many, mostly majority nations, despite the fact that they recognized that they didn't like some of the speech that he had said about it.
Both decisions were 5-4.
Both were 5-4 in the president's favor.
Yes, and so they were good. They were decisions decided 5-4 in the right way, according to President Trump, and we would certainly agree with that and constitutionally. But as we mentioned earlier, shaky ground that these justices are ruling on. They're ruling on touchy-feely stuff and not constitutional law. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, joining us to for the next few minutes is Sandy Rios. Sandy is Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, as she's heard each weekday morning. Here from 7:05 to 8 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio with the program Sandy Rios in the Morning, where she covers current events from a biblical worldview and a constitutional perspective. And Sandy joins us now. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well.
I'm doing good too, Sandy.
Good. I'm glad you added that in.
Wanted to know,
I did. I wanted to know, and I too am doing well.
Ed's very sensitive man.
I am.
He has to be the center of it all. if he isn't, he'll inject himself into it. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, Sandy, I'm going to let Steve get us started here and let you comment on what he's going to talk about, which you don't know. Go ahead, Steve.
I'm supposed to know.
Yeah. Well, you do know about this, yeah. Sandy. The anger of the left. The left is just basically melting down because just about everything they try to do to foil this president is not working. The latest round of attacks center around confronting Trump supporters, confronting Trump's staff and the president himself. We have now a U.S. sitting member of Congress who's calling for this. I want you to listen, Sandy, to some of the things that Maxine Waters has said. I know you've had some of these same comments on your show, so you'll know about this. This is Maxine Waters.
I have not called for the harm of anybody. This president has lied again. And so our members of the Democratic Caucus are talking about civility, and that makes good sense. But protest is civility. Protest is about peaceful resistance to the kind of actions that we're experiencing from this president. This president will try to do everything to divert our attention. He calls me names. He calls everybody names. As a matter of fact, we expect that from him. I've said nothing like that.
Right.
I've talked about peaceful protest. Right.
Of course, this comes just a day after she had some pretty pointed comments that talked about cornering people that they are not welcome. Anybody that works for President Trump is not welcome. In fact, let's listen to what she had to say just the other day.
You have members of your cabinet that are being booed out of restaurants. Who have protesters taking up at their house. Who saying no peace, no sleep. No peace, no sleep. And guess what? We're going to win this battle because while you try and quote the Bible, Jeff Sessions and others, you really don't know the Bible. God is on our side. On the side of the children. On the side of what's right. On the side of what's honorable. On the side of understanding that if we can't protect the children, we can't protect anybody. And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
So, Sandy, which Maxine Waters are you believing? The one that says we're for civility and debate, or the one that says we're going to push back and make sure that everybody knows they're not welcome?
Well, like I always say, you look at what a person does and not just what they say. Maxine has a long history of supporting, let's just say, public acts of disdain toward people. She was praising the Los Angeles riots way back when. There were deaths caused by those, some very serious injuries. Maxine thought that was a great idea. She worked with Jesse Jackson, the Rainbow Coalition. Maxine Waters, along with many, in fact, I'd say most members of the Black Caucus, are at their roots socialist/communist. I know that that's an outrageous thing to say, maybe, to some people's ears.
No, I think they're probably proud of the socialist part. I doubt they would accept the communist part. But.
Well, you know, former Congressman Alan West did an expose on this, and he was roundly criticized for it, but he did a real research project, and actually it is true. I wish I, in this moment, I can't give you the exact connections, but I just did a long interview on the socialist communist connections of so much of what's happening in terms of this movement. And it's pretty frightening. And it's not even that hidden. It's just that people don't know about it. So Maxine Waters has a history of, we've heard it. Look, she's been talking nonstop since Donald Trump became president,
right,
advocating for the most, the worst kinds of subversion and resistance. So I guess I choose the first, the second example, Steve, and not the first.
Let me ask you this, Sandy, about this situation, because the rhetoric from the left is unlike anything I remember seeing. And from we go back to the Kathy Griffin, the comedian, holding a severed head of President Trump up as a, and this was a funny thing. Remember the bloody severed head?
Madonna, I'm going to blow up the White,
White
House.
The resistance from day one. The threats that Bill Maher saying he hopes the economy completely collapses so President Trump will not win a reelection. He doesn't care who's hurt. On and on we go with this. Confronting the Sarah Sanders, Huckabee Sanders at that restaurant the other night, the other lady, the Department of Homeland Security lady.
Oh, Samantha Bee. I won't even come close to repeating what she said about Ivanka. Just absolutely vile comments.
Vice President Pence goes to a Broadway show and is called out
right
in front of everybody by the by the people who are doing the show, and on and on. Steve Scalise is shot, and many other Republican congressmen could have been killed that day.
Right,
practicing baseball. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, I just think of in regular people, like people who went to Trump rallies when the presidential campaign was going on, attacked when they went into these rallies, not safe, beaten, and I mean, I don't know how widespread those stories were. Certainly among conservatives, we saw the pictures and saw. I don't know that the mainstream press ever really reported the violence done against Trump supporters then. Unbelievable things. I can still see that stuff in my mind's eye. It was frightening. And at the inauguration, Tim, when we were at the inaugural events in Washington, and you will recall that people standing in line or waiting to get into the inaugural balls were they were planning on attacking them with liquids and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's regular people too. It's not just well known.
But these people on the far left doing these things, for the most part, they don't believe in God. I've mentioned this before. They don't believe in God. Therefore, they don't believe in absolute truth. Therefore, they don't believe in morals, only the morals that they come up with. And they don't believe in manners or civility. Or if they do, they barely do, or they'll give lip service to it, but they don't mind Madonna saying, I want to blow up the White House. They cheer. They cheer.
Right.
And then they use the most vile language, you know, in this hope. But again, I think the difference between those on the far left and those on our side, what I call traditionalist, now, there are some examples, and President Trump has, from time to time, I think, gone overboard in this kind of rhetoric. I really do. I think he, you know, I have to be fair in this thing, but I think oftentimes his response is just in anger of everybody piling on him every day, all day, and you get tired of it after a while. You know what I'm saying now?
Right.
But I'm just saying that this is going to lead to bloodshed. One day. Could be soon, somebody's going to shoot one of the cabinet officials at a restaurant, and everybody and all the left's going to cheer, you know, because, hey, we've taken down Hitler's minion. Mm. You know what I'm saying? This is how they are, and this is we're not too far removed from that, I don't think. Sandy,
Tim, let me tell you something. This is really very controversial, even I tell you before I say it. Some of the people that I know on the inside of the intelligence intelligence of intelligence. They've worked with it before. They know the inside. They've been researching what happened in Las Vegas. And they would say to you that the truth about that has yet to come out. And they believe that it was a targeting of Trump supporters and conservatives at that concert. Now, that hasn't been verified yet. I'm just telling you, there are lots of people looking into this and investigating it. So if that proves to be the case, then blood has already been shed in mega proportions. That was a slaughter.
Well, you could have had a slaughter of those Republican congressmen easy. That was just...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or an FRC.
Yeah, but that was... but that's still the same... but it preceded the current environment we are in. I'm talking about the FRC. But, we will, hope and pray no violence happens. But let me ask you this, one other question, Sandy, before I let you go here. To understand the psychology of the left right now in all this, these secular progressives, they are motivated by in their mind, a righteous cause. They have to be. Righteous, can't believe I'm using that word here. But, I mean,
that's their perspective.
Their perspective is that they are stopping Hitler 2.0, right? That's what they believe. Because they believe that the travel ban, for example, is anti-Muslim. So Donald Trump hates Muslims, therefore we have to stop him from hating Muslims. He wants to control the border, build a fence, turn migrants away. This is how they phrase it. Therefore, he's anti-Hispanic. He's xenophobic. We must stop the man because he does not represent America because he's turning these little children away and ripping them out of the arms of their parents. He doesn't care about, and on we go. So they are, that's their fire in the belly, right?
I think that's true of some of them, Tim. That would be probably a lot of people voting and working on the left. But you have to understand that a lot of people that are voting and working on the left have a very different strategy.
Okay.
A part of Saul Alinsky's tactics, and he was like the modern-day communist thought provocateur in the Western world, was to target a person, target and personalize in order to destroy the movement. So you pick out somebody, you humiliate, you target them, and you destroy, you make it personal. You isolate them. It's a psychological tactic. And you destroy the movement by making it personal. You don't just do grand, broad sweeps about, like we do, about the left believes this, the left believes that. You pick out somebody and you destroy them. You embarrass them. You take them down. And often you use their principles. They're, like I'd say in the Judge Moore case, use his high standards, his righteous presentation, twist it, use it against him, find some chink, and use his own weapon against him. Okay. Those are Saul Alinsky tactics. They're tactics that go all the way back to the early days of communism and the teachings of Lenin. So it is purposeful. It is not about the grander thought of these poor kids.
Okay, they're using that as, although a lot of Americans may be motivated by that, the ones who really are behind this, you're saying, have a more sinister plan.
Yes,
for our
Tim, it was true in the 60s and 70s too.
Okay.
When the 60s anti-war movement and the Make Love Not War and Free Love and all of this, the anti-Vietnam War movement, the vast majority of young people then, thought they were just trying to make love, not war. And they were duped, though, by a smaller group of communists who were manipulating their thought. Bernadine Dorn, Bill Ayers, David Horowitz, who you probably know, he's a good friend of mine, came out. They were the thinkers, and they were the ones pulling the levers. And so then you had all these teenagers and young people out in the streets marching, and they thought they were marching. We've got to stop nuclear war. We've got to stop this terrible war in Vietnam. Yeah, a lot of them actually thought that. But they were being manipulated, and that's the way the left works. Same thing now.
All right. Hey, Sandy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Look forward to your show in the morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tim. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye. Ed, have a great day.
Hey, thank you, Sandy. Appreciate it. You too.
Okay.
Sandy Rios. Check Sandy out in the morning, 7:05 to 8 o'clock here each weekday morning, Central Time on American Family Radio. I'm Tim with Ed and Walker. Walker, did you have something you wanted to say about what Sandy just discussed?
Nope, I'm good. Sandy said it all great.
Ed?
No, I'm looking at an article on Fox News from, what's her name, Penny Nance from Concerned Women for America. Yeah. She's got this laundry list of attacks, verbal attacks, You remember the correspondence dinner? Remember Wolf, Michelle Wolf?
Yeah.
Insulting Kellyanne Conway, and then with Sarah
Vicious.
Huckabee Sanders sitting right there, just vicious. That kind of stuff is pouring out of the left.
It's poison.
Yes.
Is what it is. Somebody's going to get killed. Steve Scalise almost did.
Yes.
And the left.
I'm still very suspicious. Sandy mentioned it. I'm still very suspicious. We've talked about the Vegas shooting. Very suspicious on why we have not heard anything. And if they don't have any kind of motive, then just tell us. But this has gone on, how long has
over
that been?
Almost a year.
A year.
We're talking about
I'm suspicious that it was a leftist going after Trump.
The FBI has motives after a week on a lot of these cases. And you're telling me y'all been on that for a year with hundreds of agents and you don't have an answer? This is that Vegas shooting is fishy at best.
Right.
And
if you can, and if you got nothing, if the guy was clean, he had nothing on Facebook,
say that too.
Yeah. But to Sandy's point, some of the suspicion was because it was a country concert,
right?
That this
lot of Trump supporters.
That this person was just going after Trump supporters. And excuse me for being suspicious about media silence and the FBI, you know, deep state.
All right, Steve, what else you got, brother?
We have been I got to give credit to The Intercept, which is intercept.com is theintercept.com, a website that does a lot of really good journalism pretty much down the middle. They have found that crisscrossing the United States in kind of nondescript towers in major cities are AT&T towers where the NSA, the National Security Agency, is surveilling Americans. This is in they found towers in Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Los Angeles, New York City, San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. And what they're saying is that these hubs transport large quantities of the Internet across their wires, but that AT&T is one of the most trusted partners of the NSA. NSA and AT&T work hand in hand, and that the scope of this surveillance is not restricted to AT&T customers. For the surveillance purpose, commandeering AT&T's massive infrastructure and using it as a platform to covertly tap into communications processed by other companies. This is your communications on your phone. Now, they're not specific as to whether they're reading your texts or listening to your phone calls, and there's been this whole pushback by security agencies saying, well, we're just getting numbers and data, metadata, but can they track you, can they track your movements, and really, are they listening in is one of the questions. But it's a huge discovery by The Intercept that it's a pretty massive surveillance program by the NSA against American people.
Well, and part of the confusion about these kinds of processes is that the government, by and large, says we're not spying on American citizens. We are looking for communications coming from outside the United States to American citizens, checking for, you know, radicalization and ideology and threats. But you just sit there and you go, okay, well, maybe that is what you're doing, but you're asking us essentially to trust you that you're not going any further than that. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know what kind of oversight is going on and what kind of truth is coming out if they have meetings with government officials. That's an awful lot of power, and that is an awful lot of surveillance going on, and I don't know where that information's going, if it's stored, for how long. Are they spying on American people? Are they tracking where we're going? And the thing is, as we're looking at what the left seems to be comfortable with, which is more and more government and more, you know, I mean, the government telling you, we have four Supreme Court justices saying, California can tell crisis pregnancy centers that they've got to promote abortion. We're fine with that. We're just one Supreme Court justice away from that being legal. Then I start to worry that 2020 election, you get, X number of Supreme Court justices. Now, all of a sudden, the government's saying, yeah, we are spying on you.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? We got the Supreme Court backing us up.
And one of the things that's even more scary about that is that the court that controls this is the FISA court, which is a secret court by design because it deals with classified intelligence issues. Mm-hmm. And so if they are going, if there is a purpose with foreign entities trying to corrupt the United States, that is something that the FISA court should be there. But there is, unlike the Supreme Court, where you see how everybody voted and we're one justice away, we have no clue how the FISA court is constructed or where it's going.
Yeah, and nobody has to answer these questions about what is my, how do my emails help protect this country? How does the NSA having my emails help you protect from jihadis? Because it's not like I'm emailing jihadis. So this bulk gathering of communications, and they can say, well, you know, we don't gather this, we do gather this. No, they gather everything. They have everything, and the only time it's useful for the most part is after a tragedy has occurred. So, for example, if you have like the Orlando shooter, what they do is he's already murdered 50 people. It's not like they're going to stop it. What they do is they gather the evidence to find the motive.
Right.
So they go to the NSA database, dig up all of his data, and then say, well, here's his motive.
Well, let's not forget all this about the Russian collusion for the 2016 election. We are starting to find out that the FISA court was deceived, warrant was obtained, and the all under the guise of we want to see if Russians are colluding or they're trying to affect our election. And what happens? Trump supporters, Trump staff, Trump administration officials spied on.
Right.
So you sit there and you go, well, that if they'll do it to the Trump team, you think they won't do it to me?
Right.
And I think, Walker, you're hitting really close to where this argument is playing out. The question is, do investigators, does the federal government has to get a specific warrant with Walker Wildman's or Steve Jordahl's name on it to go after that? If they have reason to suspect that our emails or my emails are going to a terrorist, then yeah, maybe then there's a legitimate reason to go in and look at my social media history. But the warrants they're getting are much broader than that. They are literally looking at geographic areas and saying, what about this square mile? Is there anybody in this square mile that has, or we suspect that the it's targeting the square mile, so we're going to look at everybody.
Yeah.
That's where the battle is. You need to get those as narrow as possible and still protect the country.
I feel sorry for the poor agent that has to take Tim Wildman's emails. They are going to be bored out of their mind. Huh?
Yeah.
Are you trying to get the rest of us to say that you're boring? I'm not going to do it, Tim.
No, I'm just saying my emails are pretty lame. You're not going to find much there. I mean, you can look at them if you want to. In all seriousness, we have to be careful in this country about there's a balance, especially in this post 9/11 era, between national security, preventing jihadi attacks on our country, and our personal freedom and our right to privacy, which is a sacred American right as well. So, there's a tension there, but we always need to ask the questions, how does this line up with the Constitution,
Right.
Anyway, good news from the Supreme Court today, 5-4. Decisions. One supports the right of pro-life clinics in California not to have to promote abortion. And the other 5-4 decision was in support of President Trump as commander-in-chief of this country being able to set immigration policy, at least temporarily. And the Supreme Court, by slim 5-4 margin, said that is the right of the commander-in-chief, not of federal judges, to decide who comes into the country. We'll be back momentarily with more. Thank you, Steve Jordahl.
My pleasure.
We'll be back in 5 minutes, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.